on the web at wardenmartin.subaru.com.
Good morning. Welcome to Focus 580, our morning talk show. My name's David Inge. Glad to have you with us. We're also pleased to have back here on the program Rick Karch from Rick's Automotive Service in Champaign. He is generally here at least four times a year. We try to have him on at least every season. And occasionally, we're not quite so locked into a real tight schedule like that, but at least several times a year he is here to answer questions about cars. If you have a problem, all you have to do is call in here, tell us about what kind of car it is, give us the make and the model, give us the best description that you can of the problem, and Rick will do his best to suggest where the problem lies and how to deal with it. Questions are certainly welcome. 333-9455, toll free 800-222-9455. Well, good to have you here again.
Thank you.
We were just talking a little bit here about, well, we were sort of talking about hybrid cars, and I guess the reason that that was in my mind is just that because of the cost of gasoline. I don't think anybody really thinks that it's going to go back down, that it's going to at least be where it is and maybe get to be more. Maybe I'd ask the question, supposing you just have a conventional gasoline engine car, is there anything, any basic stuff that people could be doing to try to make sure that they get at least the mileage that they should be getting and, you know, possibly get a little bit better? I mean, is there anything that really much you can do in terms of your driving style or maintenance or anything like that?
Well, in terms of maintenance, just the manufacturer's scheduled maintenance is important. Cars that get upwards in near 100,000 miles, it's a good thing to consider replacement of the oxygen sensor. The oxygen sensor is a pretty influential input to the computer in terms of fuel mileage. Tire pressures are important. Normal tune-up components, when we think about that anymore, it's typically just spark plugs and fuel filter and air filter. The other thing that's recommended four times a year is fuel injector cleaner that you simply purchase at a parts store and put in the gas tank yourself. As far as driving habits, I think most people realize that, you know, there's been results and studies done where if you're running 5-10 miles an hour over the speed limit, the mileage decreases a certain percentage. And then, of course, if you're running 80 mile an hour, it's even less than that. The other thing that affects fuel mileage is accelerating and decelerating when you're on the highway. So cruise control is a very beneficial component to have in terms of fuel mileage, because it's most people don't realize how often they're accelerating or decelerating. And every time you're doing that, of course, you're adding more fuel and affecting mileage. So, and just the normal process of accelerating and decelerating contributes to increased mileage. Hmm.
I know one of the things we talked about before is trying to make sure you maintain your recommended tire pressure, and that's actually a safety issue.
Yes.
Is that also a mileage issue, tire pressure?
Yes, it is.
So you want to make sure that also you're within what the manufacturer says you should
correct.
Be. So if you're
too low,
that will decrease. Cut down on the mileage?
Yes. Yes.
Okay. All right. Well, we've got a caller here ready to go, and anybody else who's out there would like to call in here and talk with Rick, you can do that by dialing the number here in Champaign-Urbana, 333-9455. We do also have a toll-free line, good anywhere that you can hear us, 800-222-9455. First caller, Champaign, line number one. Hello.
Hi there.
Mm-hmm.
I've got a 2000 Ford Ranger. And I'm wondering, the problem seems to be when we start to accelerate and get to going around, say, 40 miles an hour, so it kind of quivers, and then you go a little faster and it seems to even out. But if you slow down again, it does about the same thing. And I'm wondering if that could be the alignment or if there's something else that would cause that.
Well, help me with your quiver. Is it something you feel? Or?
Yeah, you feel it. It just feels like it's almost like, you know, those corrugated middle sections of the highway. It's almost like you're going over that. Not that intense, but it's sort of like that. It's just this little bumpy, quivery feeling like you're going over a rough road, and then it evens out.
Well, the next time, I guess first thing I would suggest, just does it have a tachometer in the truck?
It's a manual, so no.
Okay.
I mean, not a manual. I mean, it's automatic.
Right. Okay. Is to try driving it and not allow it to go into overdrive.
Okay.
That's approximately the speed at which it goes into overdrive. And sometimes when they go into overdrive, it's kind of a
There's a little shake.
Shake or maybe a little shutter, depending on how well it actually engages overdrive. So try it without overdrive at that speed and see if the problem goes away. And then if it goes away, then decelerate and then come back to that speed that it typically occurred at and then, put it back into overdrive.
So it might be just switching to overdrive.
It may be what you're referring to. Because if it doesn't happen at any other speeds, meaning as the transmission goes from first gear as you accelerate, and then, of course, it shifts to second, if you don't notice it as the engine's accelerating, it's probably not related to the engine or the drivetrain.
Hmm. Okay. I'll check that out then.
Okay.
Thank you very much.
All right. Thank you. Let's go to Urbana. That's our next person here, line number two. Hello.
Hello, Rick.
Yes.
I have a 1994 Dodge Intrepid. And it has 40,000 miles on it, and I have Michelin tires, the original tires on the car. They're all-weather tires. Never had a flat. The tread looks excellent. I wonder, is there a problem that after having a car and the tires for a while that the rubber might deteriorate, or is it all right to keep driving those tires until the tread wears down?
Well, typically if there's a deterioration, it's a visual observation. The sidewall of the tire, you'll see actual cracks in the tire. So as long as they visually look okay, you're fine.
Uh-huh. Okay, and then replacing those tires, at the time, they were publicizing all the research done on the Intrepid. It was a new car, and they talked about special tires, but I've noticed that there are all kinds of different makes of tires on the Intrepids that year. When I do replace them, just get the correct size?
Yeah. Yes, and if you're happy with those tires, meaning the way they ride and corner and handle, then when you go shopping for tires, tell them you want something as close to this a match is what you presently have in the vehicle.
Uh-huh. Okay, well, thank you.
Sure.
Okay, let's go on again. Line number three is next.
Is that me?
Urbana, yes, sir.
Hello.
Yeah.
I have a 94 Plymouth Voyager with a 2.5-liter engine, and the problem I have is that when it's in the warm-up period, that is to say it's neither cold nor completely warm, very often it will lurch, and it's particularly troublesome when I go to pull out in traffic and hit the accelerator and practically nothing happens. I just wonder if you have any idea of what's wrong with it. I've had it into my local mechanic twice. The first time they cleaned the injectors, the second time they put on new plugs and wires. They put it on the computer. They can't find anything wrong with it. They've checked the EGR valve, and that seems to be functioning normally, and they're kind of at their wit's end as to what's wrong with it.
Well, probably the best thing to do would be to start with fuel pressure. Monitor fuel pressure while driving. No check engine light.
Occasionally the check engine light comes on, but they can't get any kind of information from it because the next time I bring it in, it's out. As soon as you turn it off and start it up again, the check engine light stays out until the next time it decides to come on, which might be, you know, another 2 or 3 days later.
Well, it still would be in memory in the computer.
Oh, would it? Okay.
Yes, so they should be able to retrieve that. So that may be helpful
in
diagnosing the problem.
Okay, so it sounds like it could be fuel pressure, which would mean what, a bad filter, bad pump, or either?
Well, maybe a filter-related problem. It's one of those things you have to have the tool hooked up and drive the vehicle and put it in a record mode so that you can drive it.
Oh, so you just carry a computer around with you, is that what you're saying?
Well, the shop can do that for you.
The shop does that.
Yeah, they'll have what's called a scanner.
Okay.
And they can plug it in, and if you can tell them specifically the process in which you drive it that you experience the problem, then they can do the same thing. And while they're driving it, the machine can record everything that's going on with the computer.
Okay, so this scanner is something that's small enough to actually fit in the car.
Yes.
Okay. But what about things like oxygen sensor or The other sort of hypothesis I was working with was that there was something wrong with the way it was sensing temperature, since this seems to be happening during the warm-up phase, that it was getting incorrect information about the intake manifold temperature. Is that a reasonable hypothesis, and if so, what could cause it?
Well, it's one of those things that until you actually monitor the sensors and the inputs from them to the computer, there's just so many different sensors.
I see. Okay.
But at that point, maybe I would probably be paying attention more to what the oxygen sensor is doing.
Okay. All right. Thank you very much.
Sure.
All right. Bye. Thanks for the call. We'll keep going here. We've got next someone back in Urbana, line number one. Hello.
Yeah, hi.
Mm-hmm.
All right. I'm trying to figure out how to get rid of this big old clunker of a station wagon I have. This thing is an old late '80s full size V8 clunker, and just trying to figure out what I can do other than just sending it to the junkyard. You know,
is there a lot wrong with it?
First of all, the car actually has a carburetor. Second of all, the oil light goes on even when I've got oil in the car in the engine, and it goes on. I have to keep my foot on the pedal to get the oil light to not go off. If I'm just idling, the light goes on. My mechanic told me it's the crank bearings. Leaking pressure.
Okay, so it does have an oil pressure problem then.
Yeah, and the thing rattles like something terrible, and I don't know if it's my own inexperience or anything. I hear about crank bearings going out, and I hear the engine rattling, and I think the whole thing's going to fall apart.
Mm-hmm. Well, you've got crankshaft has bearings also for the connecting rods. So there's, but as far as getting rid of it is concerned, there's lots of organizations in town and, of course, across the country that you could contact, and you could, in essence, donate it. And then you'd get a form, and you basically get, you can't write in what you think the car is worth. It's a fair market value is what you would receive as far as a tax deduction.
Can I get any money for it, or am I just going to have to pretty much think in terms of just getting rid of it, period?
Well, if you do it that way, it would be considered a donation on your taxes.
Is there any way I can get any money for it, or is that pretty much not worth bothering with?
Well, you can try. I mean, just put a sign in it and see if anybody has any interest in it. It sounds like it needs an engine.
The only thing I could think of was just find somebody who wants to put it in the demolition derby or something like that.
No, that is coming up. It's a thought.
Yeah. Is it too? You know, if it's too late to check for something like that.
What? Check for what?
For see if somebody wants to do that.
For a demolition derby?
Yeah.
Oh sure. Yeah, that's this summer at some point. I don't know the date of it.
Yeah, I thought it was in June. I wasn't sure how long it would take somebody to. To prepare for that.
Yeah, I'm not sure, but that would be one consideration.
So there's organizations you can just donate it. Can they actually use a car like? Are there places that can actually use a vehicle like that?
Well, they would try first have the car inspected and then determine what it's going to cost to get it up to a condition in which it's either sellable, and of course if the expenses to repair it are too high, they're just going to not repair the vehicle. And then
they might actually lose money on it then, right?
That wouldn't be their intent, no.
I mean, I wouldn't want to, I don't want to just like foist my problem on somebody else. I mean, if it's not worth, seling, I don't.
Well, the best thing to do is contact some of those firms and explain to them what you've just said. And
oh, are these companies actually know about these companies actually know about cars well enough to take a half decent guess?
Yes.
Oh. Okay. So where do I look for them?
One suggestion is the Urban League.
Uh huh.
Of Champaign County.
Uh huh.
All right, contact them.
Okay. All right, and so the other thing that I worry about is that if I were to wait, like if I wanted to hang on to the car for a while, that it could actually get harder to get rid of it. I'm thinking like that's something I worry about is like the older the car gets, the more people are not going to want it, you know.
Well, with the engine making noise the way it is right now, I would try to get rid of it as soon as you can, because obviously if something breaks internally, then the car is really not going to be worth much of anything.
Because yeah.
So I would start that process soon.
Yeah. All right. I guess it's just trying to figure out what, get a list of options worked out.
Okay.
So we'll see what works best.
All right. Okay. Well, good luck with it.
All right. Thanks.
Our guest here this morning on Focus 580 is Rick Karch. He's an auto mechanic, has a business in Champaign, Rick's Automotive Service. And every once in a while, he's here on the program. We talk about cars. And if you're having a problem, you need some advice, you can give us a call, 333-9455, toll free, 800-222-9455. We were talking a little bit earlier about tires. And just for grins, my computer here, I went onto the Sears website. And I've been looking at tires, pages of tires. And I guess the one of the things I'm wondering about is here, there's a tire, there was one that is less than $30, and then you could buy a tire that is significantly more than $100. So, and this is just, I just looked at a few, and these are all of the same tire manufacturer, and I'm sure that there are many others, different name brands of tires. If you went out to a tire store, you could check them out. So I guess my question is, what exactly is the difference between a $30 tire and a $130 tire?
Well, there should be on there expected mileage life of the tire. So the $30 tire, what is it? Does it say anything?
I'd have to go back and try to find that one again. Well,
but usually it'll equate to expected life expectancy, 30,000, 40,000 miles.
I guess it does. I'm not seeing where it gives you that kind. Maybe if I spent more time, it would do that. Well, okay. Anyway, so one of the basic questions you'd want to ask looking at any tire is, how many miles do I expect to get off this tire?
Correct.
Okay. Other than that, is a more expensive tire a safer tire?
Not necessarily, no.
Yeah.
Regardless, if you do purchase tires, it's a good idea to have the alignment checked.
Okay.
All four wheels.
Other than that, anything else in terms of basic maintenance that has to do with tires?
No, just normal tire rotation. Okay. And as far as tire rotation is concerned, they typically will give you mileage intervals, 5,000 or 7,500. It's best to actually measure the tire with a tread depth tool, mm-hmm. and you obviously want the tires to wear out the same rate, so what you're trying to do in process of rotation is that if the front tires have less tread, then you want to move the rear tires to the front. The prominent wear occurs on the tires that are on the front of the vehicle.
And does that matter whether it's got a front wheel drive or rear wheel drive?
I don't believe so.
So even if it's got rear wheel drive, you're still the most of the wear is still going to be on the front tires.
Yes.
And is that because of those are the ones that steer?
Well, steering, and of course, upon braking, there's a lot of weight transfer to those tires. But tire rotation is very important.
Okay. Our guest here this morning is Rick Karch, and we got several people lined up ready to go with calls, so we'll keep on going. And next person we'll talk to is in Savoy, line number one, right here, line one. Hello.
Hi, mm-hmm. I have a 97 Mazda MPV, which I'm very happy with. It has 96,000 miles on it, and I don't know how much longer it's going to be able to go. But I pull a trailer occasionally that has a weight of 1,500 pounds and a hitch weight of 175 pounds. If I were to get a newer car, what would you advise to do that?
Well, with that information, when you start shopping for a vehicle, each vehicle will have a towing capacity
uh-huh.
rating. So that's the information that you use to help decide what.
Well, is there any car out there now that I would prefer not going to a brand new car again because you lose so much in the first year?
Right.
What is there anything in particular that you think is a good one to do that?
Well, not really. I mean, I don't know that I really want to give any specific recommendations.
Okay.
Just kind of rather let you, that's kind of a personal choice, but Consumer Reports is an excellent resource.
Yeah, I know. I use them a lot.
Right.
Well, they don't like my car. They don't like the Mazda MPV. Well, they don't like the, and I understand because the inside of it is, it's not as convertible as some of the other ones.
Right.
But as far as repair record, it's been excellent. Mm-hmm. I just haven't had any problems.
Well, good.
So I'm pleased with it. I hope the new ones are just as good.
I'm sure they are. Mazda's an excellent product.
Yeah. Okay. Well, thank you very much.
All right. We have somebody here on the cell phone calling from their car. So we'll go there. Line number four. Hello.
Hi. This is probably an atypical question. I have a 1957 V8 Pontiac Star Chief. My question is, in the cold weather and damp weather, I have a problem starting it. What are the best techniques for starting those engines? And I've been told that you should pump the accelerator 5 times and then lightly tap the gas. What would you recommend?
Well, it's kind of a hard thing to answer because if the car sits a lot, which I'm sure it probably does, that when you first start cranking the car, there's actually not any gasoline in the carburetor. It's probably evaporated. So the reason for your question is, I would anticipate, is that it takes a long time to start the thing. You have to crank and crank and crank and pump the accelerator, and it finally starts for you. If that's the case, then there really isn't any point in pumping the accelerator. You might as well just crank the car for 30 seconds or so and stop, and let the starter cool down a little bit, and crank it another 30 seconds so that gasoline actually gets into the carburetor, and then pump the accelerator 3 or 4 times, and it should start fine.
I've had a situation where the car starts, cranking, and I'm talking about even letting it sit a week in the cold weather, cooler weather in the spring. I drive it, I remember a concept called flooding the engine, and I crank the car. It sort of wants to ignite the engine and catch, and then it doesn't, and I've got to crank it a long time. Do you have any comments on that?
Well, I would have somebody take a look at the choke and make sure
okay.
It's operating correctly. It sounds like you have a problem with the choke. It starts okay when it's hot?
Oh, yeah. It starts right up.
Okay. Then have someone take a look at the choke. Choke pull-off diaphragm and the choke thermostatic coil.
One other question. This is more cosmetic. I want to get an AM/FM CD, but I don't want it. This is a metal dashboard. Do you have any recommendations, if you even can visualize, the kind of simplistic AM/FM CD player that I could install on the dashboard or underneath the dashboard? And it may be that you can visualize. We're dealing, of course, with those old metal dashboards.
Right.
The original radio's in, and it works, and I don't want to pull that out.
Mm-hmm. Oh, you just want to mount something separate, like put
yeah,
them in. Some people put them in the glove box.
Pardon?
Some people mount them in the glove box.
Yeah.
I mean, it's entirely up to you.
Okay. Thank you.
You're welcome.
All right. Thanks for the call. We're already at our midpoint here with our guest, Rick Karch. He's an auto mechanic. His business is Rick's Automotive in Champaign. And every once in a while he's here on the program. We talk about car care. And if you're having a problem, call in and he will do his best to help you out. 333-9455. Toll free, 800-222-9455. Champaign is next. Line number two. Right here. Hello.
Hello.
Yes.
A couple of different things. On getting an oil change, some of these places talk me into an extra $20 for, like, synthetic oil. Is that worth it? The idea that you go much farther, much more mileage than the regular oil change.
How many miles are on your car?
50,000. It's a Ford Escort.
I'm a strong believer in synthetic oil. I think it is. Particularly on cars that sit outside in the winter, the synthetic oil tends to lubricate much better because the viscosity or the thickness of it doesn't change as dramatically.
Okay, good. Well, another question, pulling up to like a red light or a stop sign, something like that, a car starts kind of a muffled knock, like knock, 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 as I take the foot off the accelerator and coast to a red light. And it seems like it's on and off type of thing. It runs fine. There's no knock or anything when it's in gear. I shouldn't say that, when it's running normally, but it's just when I'm slowing up and taking my foot off the accelerator. And I did take it into a shop several weeks ago, and then the guy went out with me. And of course, you might know, it didn't do it.
Mm-hmm.
But do you have any idea what that would be?
Does it seem to you that it's coming from the front?
Yeah, just kind of through the dashboard type of thing. It's just kind of a muffled knock, knock, knock.
Well,
but not when it's in gear.
Right. It may be associated with the exhaust or the drivetrain. Maybe if you, it may be affected as far as how quickly you decelerate.
Uh-huh.
Meaning that if you just...
I just take my foot off the accelerator.
Literally take your foot off the accelerator, or if you lightly start to release the accelerator, maybe that affects the knock. But you need to figure out how to duplicate it so that you can go back there and they can actually hear it. But once they hear it, at least they'll have an idea of what area to look at.
Well, another thing, sometimes I drop it down a gear. It's automatic, and I drop it down coming up to a stop sign. I feel it kind of probably the only one in the world that does that, but saves on braking and that sort of thing, and it seems like everybody else is races up to a stop sign and then slams on their brake. But I kind of coast to it when I see a need to stop down the line. But many times I'll just drop the gear down one.
Well, maybe that's what's creating the noise, is when you drop the gear down, of course, the engine engages that gear, and then the RPMs go up higher, and maybe it's an engine transmission movement type problem. But
yeah. Oh, well, that's interesting.
But like I said, once you figure out how to duplicate it, then go back to that shop and then do it for them, and then they'll at least know where to look.
Okay, good. Right. Thank you.
All right, thanks for the call. There are a lot of cars on the road today that have small four-cylinder engines. Do those engines have to work harder? Do they run hotter than a bigger engine? Or is it just a matter that, well, yeah, it's a small engine, but also the car is not that big.
Right.
We reduce the weight of the car, and it's in proportion to the amount of weight it's got to move, and it doesn't really make that much difference.
Correct. And then obviously by downsizing, we, in terms of the weight of the vehicle, the mileage in theory should increase,
mm-hmm.
fuel mileage. So, but you're right, the majority of the cars are four cylinders now.
Yeah. And is that any harder on the oil than the engines used to be? Okay. So that's not, that doesn't necessarily argue for the synthetic oil, although you say you like that.
I think it's an excellent product, and it's, you know, it is a little more money,
mm-hmm.
but the major manufacturers, import oriented, I should say, that's what comes in the vehicle from the factory.
Mm-hmm.
And that's what they recommend you always use is synthetic.
Huh. So you buy a Porsche, it's going to come with synthetic
oil.
That's
correct.
Mm-hmm. Okay. But for those of you who can buy a Porsche,
yes.
I wouldn't be one of those guys, but, you know, some people out there maybe. Let's talk to somebody in Urbana next, line three. Hello.
Hello.
Yes.
I have a problem. Recently, I changed on my Honda Civic 91 the pads and the brake rotors and also shoes and brake drums on the rear wheels. And after that, I got very low and spongy brake pedal. And the problem actually gets worse and worse with time. And I went back to mechanic and asked them specifically to bleed the brakes, which they did, or at least they claim they did, and actually the problem gets even worse and worse. Do you have any idea what could be, what could it be?
Well, when you first step on the brake pedal, and then you step on it a second time, and then a third time, does the pedal always stop at the same point?
Well, I have a feeling it's actually going lower and lower. So I can't pump it in.
Okay, so you can't pump the pedal, meaning as you pump the pedal, your foot doesn't get closer to you?
No.
Okay. Now, if you sit at a stoplight and you hold your foot on the brake pedal, just moderate pressure, what does your foot do?
Well, actually, to stop at the to stay at the red light or something, I actually have to press really hard, so it always almost got to the floor.
Okay, it probably needs a master cylinder.
Oh,
and that's assuming that all of the shoes in the back of the vehicle, the adjustments are correct. Does the handbrake work properly?
Oh yes.
Okay, then it probably needs a master cylinder.
I see, but that's pretty much what they told me. But the thing is that before I actually changed all the hardware, all these rotors and drums, everything worked pretty much okay, although the brakes were really old. Mm-hmm. And right after they changed it, I got this problem.
Yes. Well, by putting pads and rotors and shoes and drums on, did they put wheel cylinders on the back?
No, I guess not.
No, okay. Then what they did not create this problem.
I see.
It's just what you're experiencing is probably an internal pressure loss within the master cylinder. There's rubber seals in there, and they get hard and brittle, and they don't seal as well. You know, it's a 91 car.
Mm-hmm.
So.
I see. So you would recommend to change that one?
The master cylinder.
Mm-hmm.
Correct.
I see. Thanks a lot.
You're welcome.
All right. Thanks for the call. Let's go up to Aurora for someone else right here, line number one. Hello. Took all there in Aurora?
Oh, yes. Yeah. I didn't hear you say Aurora.
Yeah,
I'm
go
sorry.
Ahead. We know we got you.
I just bought my daughter's Chevy Lumina 95, and that is my question is this. I have a 91 Oldsmobile, a Sierra, and could you give me any points on what to do with it? I'd like to sell it for possibly $1,000 if it's worth that much. Could you give me any points about what to do with an old car? I mean, is there any value? Maybe that's the question I'm asking. Is there any actual value to it?
Oh, sure there is. I mean, as long as, is there anything wrong with it that you know?
No, okay. And I've kept it up. That's one thing I've done. I have a book, and everything I did to the car I have written down. Hmm. I have been excellent in that area. I failed in other areas of my life, but taking care of my car, it was a wonderful car. If Oldsmobile still made cars, I would have bought another Oldsmobile. Mm-hmm. It was a wonderful car. There's nothing the matter with the motor, but the body isn't so great.
Right. Well, I don't think you'll have much trouble selling it. Do you live in a...
I live in a there's a lot of people.
Yeah, maybe one of your friends knows somebody that's...
And how should I word the selling value? How should I word it? What would be, I guess, the fact that it's a good running motor?
Well, I think if you just simply state that it's a 91 old Sierra with X amount of miles, excellent condition, all maintenance records.
Well, let me write this down. You state it so well. Yes, and I have the facts to prove it, the whole book.
Right. That's a very important selling point.
And the mileage. Yeah, the mileage isn't much. Maybe it's 60,000, maybe. That's not much, is it?
Not at all.
No, I didn't think so. But I don't go too far, you know, at my age. So thank you so much.
You're welcome.
All right, well,
bye-bye.
Thank you. We'll just keep going here, and the next person we'll talk to is in Indiana. Line 4, the toll-free line. Hello.
Hello. I don't have a problem per se, but I did have a problem, and I thought perhaps from your experience you could give me some information. I've been going to the same mechanic now for, well, almost 25 years, and they've always been very honest. You know, whenever the problem has arisen, I've gone back, and they've corrected it without any hassle. And I had my engine light come on shortly, and I took it in, and it turned out to be the oxygen sensor. And he said that we recommend the original manufacturer's oxygen sensor and not any aftermarket. He says, although the price is considerably more, we think it would be better if you use that. Well, since they've treated me pretty nicely, I thought that they weren't trying to make extra money, but it's always that little doubt in your mind. And he said that the aftermarket oxygen sensors that you can get down at Auto Plus or NAP or whatever, so they do not last very long compared to the, I think it was a Delco, but anyway, it's a Buick. And I just wondered if you got any, you know, sort of a 30-second, a minute rap about that kind of situation, you know, original manufacturer versus afterwards.
A lot of the aftermarket oxygen sensors, now when we talk about aftermarket, I should say, kind of clarify that a little bit. When I purchase one that's not from the dealer, I specifically want one that's not universal, meaning that it comes in a kit and you have to cut wires and splice things together. I don't care for that. So I always try to find a sensor that has the factory connector so I don't have to do any of the splicing or anything like that. But as far as using one of that type, I have not seen any problems with them at all.
Okay, well, thanks a lot.
You're welcome.
All right, let's go to another Indiana listener here in East Chicago, line number 2. Hello.
Hello, yes, can you hear me?
Yes.
Okay, I'm calling because I own a 1991 Honda Accord, and I've been doing some repair on it recently. It's been giving me some problems, and now there's a problem that I'm really struggling with. It starts just fine, but the problem occurs when I put it in gear, it idles roughly. And if I take my foot off the brake, I press down on the accelerator, it accelerates, but not in the proper way. It accelerates like it feels as if the car is being held back, like as if it's stuttering or lugging or something. Even when I get up to highway speeds, I will still feel a little bit of something, a little bit of like a stutter, as if it's stuttering. And I've done some work on it myself. I checked the fuel system, fuel pressure, some of the components in the fuel system. I've done some checking in the ignition system, and I can't find the problem. I checked the TPS, throttle position sensor, and I'm just kind of at a loss.
So it lacks power, is that?
Kind of, yes. When I put it into gear, it idles roughly.
Well, I'm accelerating. That may be something to do with the engine mounts. Does it idle the same way as far as the way you feel it in the driver's seat, whether it's in reverse or drive?
You know, I haven't noticed if it does it in reverse or not.
Well, you might. If it's different in reverse than it is in drive, then it's the engine mounts.
Okay.
The other thing is, if it's idling too low, it can create a problem like that too. But as far as poor acceleration is concerned, how old is the fuel filter?
Not old. I replaced the fuel filter maybe a year ago, and a half ago.
How about timing belts?
Timing belt's okay. It wasn't that long ago that I replaced it.
Okay. Did the problem occur after the timing belt?
No.
Okay.
It ran fine. Just all of a sudden it began this problem.
Okay.
And I said, when I even have it up at highway speeds, I can still feel a little unsmoothness. It's still like stuttering a little bit.
Well, if that one has EGR on it, exhaust gas.
Yes, it does. That's right.
I would disconnect the hose to the valve and drive it.
Okay.
And see if that resolves the problem. A lot of those cars, when they get some age and mileage to them, the EGR valve overmodulates. In other words, it recirculates too much exhaust gases.
Okay.
So the problem that you're experiencing, does it do it when it's cold?
Yes.
Okay.
And warm also as well.
Mm-hmm. Well, if it doesn't do it when it's cold, it's probably not EGR, because EGR should not be functioning when it's cold. And when I say cold, that's before the temperature gauge even starts to move.
Yes. Well, even when the car is cold and the engine's cold, as soon as I first started, I put in gear and I feel that roughness.
Okay, well, that may be the mounts. Or it may be idling too low. It could be dirty injectors.
Dirty injectors.
Fuel injector cleaner would be a solution to that.
Now, I do use the fuel injection cleaner. I have used it not as regularly as I wish I would have.
Yeah, you should try it 4 times a year.
4 times per year. Okay. Now, can a fuel injector kind of fall out, stop working or something?
Yes. You can, if you take like a long screwdriver or a stethoscope, mm-hmm. and listen to the injector, in other words, put the screwdriver tip on the injector and the handle on your ear, mm-hmm. it should be a very, very crisp clicking type noise. If it's kind of a dull noise as you go along the 4 injectors, you'll be able to isolate which one just by its sound.
So place the tip of the screwdriver on the injector itself.
Yes.
And the handle against my ear.
Correct.
And it should be a sharp clicking sound.
Yes. Very crisp.
Okay. I will definitely give that a try.
Okay.
Thank you very much.
Good luck.
All right, bye-bye.
We're coming down here to about our last 5-6 minutes, and we'll continue to take calls, as many as we can, with our guest Rick Karch from Rick's Automotive in Champaign, 333-9455 here in Champaign-Urbana, toll-free, 800-222-9455. The next caller is over in Belgium, and line 3. Hello.
Hello.
Yeah.
Yes. This goes back to kind of the synthetic oil thing. When did honey oil first appear?
Honey oil?
Yeah.
I don't know.
But now, isn't that more? That was basically invented as an additive to help the viscosity of the oil. Is that right?
I don't, like I said, I don't know what honey oil is.
Okay, well, it's kind of like the viscosity of this oil treatment. This.
Well, honey tells me that it's very thick.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah.
So it was probably something that you would add to a car that had an oil pressure problem.
Yeah, it'd be more like the heavy-duty stop leakage type stuff that you would buy at
right.
a dollar store or something.
My experience with those additives has not been good.
Okay.
You know, things that claim they seal cooling system or... if you have a coolant leak, you know, there's sealers and stuff. I just haven't never had any luck with that stuff. And even if you do, it's really, I guess the way I look at it is a Band-Aid. I mean, you
okay.
know you've got a problem, so why not just fix it?
Yeah, yeah. That's it.
All right. Well, thanks for the call.
Thank you.
That's, you know, you go down to the automotive parts store and you can go to sections, and there are huge walls full of little plastic bottles of stuff
mm-hmm.
that – somebody is trying to say, well, we'll either solve a problem or we'll maybe improve performance. Something you
right.
can put in with the gasoline, something you can put in with the oil that will make it do its job better. So it sounds like from what you're saying is as long as you're doing your regular maintenance and you're using good quality oil, that there's nothing that you could put in with the oil that would make that oil do its job any better than just good oil.
Well, I agree. I guess my take on that is that if there was a product out there that would improve anything on the vehicle related to the engine, the cooling system, the air conditioning, the brakes, that the manufacturers would use them from day one because it would save them what the additive would cost versus the expenses during the warranty period, they would use it.
Uh-huh. Well, that makes
sense.
But
they don't.
Yeah. And then as far as fuel additives go, the one thing that, as we've discussed, that you would recommend is the injector cleaner. Other than that, anything else that someone says, go ahead and put this in your tank with gasoline and you'll get better mileage, you get better performance, you think, well, don't think so.
No, I don't think so. The only thing that, as far as additives that people should use, the older vehicles, back when we had leaded fuel, The lead was actually a lubricant for the valves and the valve seats and the cylinder head. There are additives that people should use on those older cars that used to require leaded gas.
Oh, okay.
But other than that, no.
All right. Next caller is in Flora. Line four. Hello.
Hi. Thanks for taking my phone call. Mm-hmm. I have a 1984 Mercury Topaz with about 90,000 miles on it. It runs fine. Don't seem to have any problem. But I've noticed lately that when I drive the car, that the temperature gauge will start to fluctuate while I'm driving, not get out of the range where it's supposed to be, but will move back and forth within that range. And I've checked everything, including the level of coolant in the system, and I cannot figure out what is causing it. Any ideas?
Well, what other gauges do you have? You have an oil pressure gauge? Or
I wish, but it only has the temperature gauge, I believe, on that car, and tachometer, and, of course, the fuel gauge and the speedometer.
Okay. When the temperature gauge starts to move, when you say move, it moves to the right and then it moves to the left. Is that a description correct?
Yeah, that's right. It has the word normal on there, you know, to show the range. Right. It'll go like from the N over to the M and then go back to the N, and it'll, as you're driving, just keep moving back and forth.
Right. Do you ever pay attention to if the gas gauge is doing the same thing?
Yes, and it does not change.
It doesn't move whatsoever?
No. Well, the gas gauge will occasionally move because, you know, I assume that the way that that sock is set up in the gas tank, you know, I'm talking about the thing that I assume that the gas gauge sometimes, if you stop or if you start, it'll kind of vary, but it doesn't seem to have a pattern, anything like the temperature gauge.
I see. The reason I ask is that those gauges don't use battery voltage. They use a lower voltage, somewhere around 7 to anywhere from 5 to 7 volts. So they use what's referred to as a voltage stabilizer, which is in the instrument cluster.
Mm-hmm.
And it's basically a transistor. But when you have varying gauges like that and the temperature is not varying of the engine, then the voltage is probably varying. And that's what's varying the position of the needle of the gauge.
Would you think that that is any kind of a signal of any kind of a danger of any kind, or is it just kind of like something that I could learn to live with for the foreseeable future?
Well, as long as the swing is still within that normal range, then I wouldn't envision a problem. Now, if it's a case where it goes up past halfway and then all of a sudden it goes down below halfway, then you might have a problem with the thermostat.
Okay.
But if it's quivering while driving, you might see if the quivering changes if you accelerate and decelerate.
I can't get it to seem to do anything other than I just notice if I'm driving down the road that once it gets fully warmed up, you will see this fluctuation where it'll just slowly, you know, move one way and then move the other way. And quite frankly, it never even comes close to getting out of what would be called the normal range.
Yeah.
But I'm looking, in my mind, I keep thinking, is it a warning signal? And that's why I started checking everything I could think of. And I thought, well, maybe it's just, I thought maybe it's like a sending unit or something was malfunctioning. And you say you think it's a transistor. Is it something that could be replaced if I wanted to? Or
yes, I would just have somebody monitor the resistance value of the temperature gauge sending unit.
Okay.
And the other thing is, how old is the thermostat?
Well, I think the thermostat's about 3 years old.
Okay. Well, I would have him monitor the resistance value of the thermistor.
Okay.
And if that seems okay, I mean, a thermostat's fairly inexpensive, too.
Sure.
And just change the coolant at the same time.
Okay.
But okay. I would suggest approaching it that way first.
Okay. Well, that sounds like a great idea.
All right.
Thank you very much.
You're welcome.
We'll get one more here. We got somebody on a cell phone. Our line number one. Hello.
Yeah, this is Mike Williams.
And, yeah.
I've got a 95 Ford Ranger that runs excellent. But once it gets warmed up, it's like you're driving, whether you're in town or out on the highway, either one, and you're trying to maintain the speed and, you know, how you kind of let up off the accelerator a little bit if you get going a little too fast or whatever, that it'll kind of, the vehicle should kind of coast along. Well, this one, when you let off of it too much, it like it's like you've downshifted. It just, I mean, it really starts slowing down quick. And when you go to reaccelerate, it's like you're letting out on the clutch, dumping the clutch, in other words. It just, it jerks.
It's,
you know, it's like there's a hesitation there.
It's an automatic
transmission. What that might be?
This is an automatic transmission?
No, it's the standard. Four-speed.
Oh, okay. So
five-speed. Five-speed, I'm sorry.
Okay, so as you decelerate and accelerate, there's kind of a...
Yeah, it's got like a dead spot or whatever, you know. It's just hard to explain. But it doesn't do it when it's cool. Mm-hmm. Just whenever it gets up into the normal operating temperature. When it's cool, it runs fine. And also, if you keep it in a higher gear in town, like if you're going 25 to 30, if you leave it in fourth gear, it's fine. But if you get above that, then it starts doing it. But it never does it until it's warmed up.
I guess I still don't really have a sense of what you're experiencing.
It's like there's a dead zone or something in the accelerator pedal or something. I don't know.
No check engine light or anything?
No.
So if you decelerate and then accelerate, there's no noises?
No, there's no noise. It's just, like, you know, if you're trying to maintain 55, you know how your foot, you kind of push down and you let up, you know, to maintain that speed. Well, if you let up on it, it's just like, you know, it starts slowing down. And then when you go to push the pedal back down to maintain the 55, you can push it down quite a ways, and then it'll finally start taking the gas and take off.
I'm not sure from that description.
And I'm really sorry, but I think we're going to have to leave it there because I don't really have a whole lot more time to give it. My apologies to the caller. If he wants to try and get in touch with Rick and talk some more, I guess we can do that, but we're going to have to quit for right now. Well, thanks very much.
Thank you.
I'm sorry we could solve that problem. All problems cannot be solved.
Well, I had a hard time deciphering that one.
Right. Well, in any case, Rick Karch, our guest, he's an auto mechanic. His business is Rick's Automotive in Champaign. Occasionally he's here and we talk about car care. Thanks a lot. We appreciate it. Programming here on AM 580 made possible by grant from the Thrifty Nichols American Classifieds, distributed each Thursday in over 100 towns in East Central Illinois. On the web, AmericanClassifieds.com. Programs also made possible by grant from Christopher's Fine Jewelry Design.